I'm a grateful alcoholic. My name is George. My sobriety date is January 19th of 1994. By grace of good sponsorship, a wonderful fellowship, and a lot of hard work, and, I'm still here. It's really that simple. I started this way because I was once told if you don't say your sobriety date, you ain't got one. And I spent this weekend speaking with my sponsor in California and speaking to my sponsor's son down here. We can't get on a phone anymore, so a little emotional today. And we're on the eighth step today. I want to start off, though, this week is Alcoholics Anonymous' 77th anniversary, 10th of June 1935 is when we were founded. And it's a wonderful, remarkable thing that happened. I was listening to some archive stuff earlier this week, and Bill Wilson was talking about, and there was a piece of wire recording from 1954 where Bill was speaking about people calling the Big Book the Bible. And he said the people that wrote that were not saintly at all. So I've been holding on to that all week because I sure as hell ain't saintly. And we're going to be talking about relationships, so I definitely didn't do those very well before I got here. I want to do a quick little rundown like I do every week. I do want to read something because in the book, as Bill sees it, on page 191, there's a little thing that I want to read at the beginning of humility, because in each step we talk about humility. It's one of the principles that is behind every single step. And it says, there are few absolutes inherent in the 12 steps. Most steps are open to interpretation based on the experience and outlook of the individual. Consequently, the individual is free to start the steps at whatever point he can or will. God, as we understood him, may be defined as a power greater or a higher power. For thousands of AA members, itself has been a higher power is all they need in the beginning. This acknowledgement is easy to make if a newcomer knows that most of the members are sober and he isn't. His admission is the beginning of humility. At least the newcomer is willing to disclaim that he himself is God. That's all the start he needs. If following this achievement, he will relax and practice as many of the steps as he can, he will sure to grow spiritually. Another thing Bill Wilson says, this is a spiritual kindergarten. The reason I read that is I always hear people say the steps are in order for a reason. I believe you should take them in order. I don't believe we all come in here on the first step, on the same spot, on the same step, or some of us come in here. I came in on a second tradition. That's how I came in. I saw hope in the room, and that's how I found Alcoholics Anonymous. Dr. Bob came in on step 9. He went around to the town and cleaned up the mess he made, and that's how he stayed sober. So, yeah, we do all do other steps, and it's better if you do them in order, but my experience is I did all my steps in order. We came in here, and the 11th step was the first thing I was told to do was prayer and meditation. I did all the work necessary for the other things. I was early in recovery, and I was at 11-step meeting my first week. And I had to sit, watch everybody meditate. I'll talk about that in 11. And I had no idea how to sit still, so it was very hard for me to pay attention. I watched everybody with their eyes closed and was wondering how they could do that. It was amazing. You know. So those were the things that was my experience. But I also believe that there is a process, and none of us like the process. And the eight-step process is probably the hardest process I had to go through. So with that said, and I wanted to use that as a background for a lot of reasons, because last week we were talking about doing what's right and all the prayers that we got to this point. There was, in the big book, and I'm going to use the third edition because I don't have that broken down in the fourth way of doing this, the same way in the fourth edition yet. The first prayer is, honorably advised that every alcoholic to read the book through, and though we come to scoff, we remain to pray. It's one of the first prayers, that we remain to pray. To sit quietly when in doubt, asking only for direction and strength to meet our problems as he would have us. That's in page 13, and that was in Bill's story. Never was I to pray for myself, except as my request bore on my usefulness to others. Page 59, it says that we ask his protection and care with complete abandon. And 59 again, we admitted to God, to ourselves, another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs, which is our fifth step. In the 11th step, it says we sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. Page 63, we said to our maker as we understood him, I offer myself to thee to build with me and do with me as thou wilt. 67, we ask God to show them the same tolerance, pity, patience we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. That's our resentment prayer in the fourth step. 67, God save me from being angry. 68, we ask to remove our fear and direct our attention to what he would have us be. Page 69, we ask him to mold our ideas and help us to live up to them. Page 69, in meditation, we ask that God, what we should do about each specific matter. Page 70, one of my favorite ones. If we're sorry for what we've done and we ask, have an honest desire to let God take us to better things, we will be forgiven and we will have learned our lesson. Then it says if we're not sorry, we're quite sure to drink. Page 70, to sum up about sex, we honestly pray for each right ideal, guidance in each questionable situation, for sanity and for the strength to do the right thing. 72, we require action on our part. Once completed, it will mean we have admitted to God, to ourselves, and another human being the exact nature of our defects. 75, carefully reviewing the first five proposals, we ask if we admitted anything, for we're building an arch, we shall walk a free man at last. And then it says, we ask on 75 again, we thank God from the bottom of our heart, for we know him better. And then it says on 76, if we still cling to something we won't let go of, we ask God to help us become willing. We're on the sixth step now. And again on 76, if we have the will to do this, we ask until it comes. And then on 76, I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character that stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me the strength as I go forth. I'm here to do your bidding. And there's the amen. Now, on 79 is where we're at now, because we're just about on page 80. We're halfway through the big book at this point, and we're only on step 8, which means there's another 80 pages to go through four more steps. Think about that one for a while. So there's a lot of information we're going to be going through now. My favorite prayer, and it's the prayer that I base my recovery in. It says, reminding ourselves that we decided to go to England for a spiritual experience, we ask that we be given the strength, direction to do the right thing, no matter what the personal consequences might be. It's a real important prayer to me. I believe that my foundation and my recovery is based in step 8 today. It's been there for a very long time. I do all the rest of this stuff, but the 8th step is where I became a really active participant in my life, in many areas of my life. So as that is my background, because we say there's no prayers in the big book and there's no God in the big book, we're 80 pages into it. I must have read about 40 prayers in there. It's close to it. And I didn't think there was any prayers in the big book. I didn't even realize every time they said we asked, there's a prayer involved. So the process that I was going through is I was praying all along. I was given a 3rd-step prayer to do. I was given a 7th-step prayer to do. I had an 11th-step prayer I had to do. I had to write my own prayers in the 2nd-step and 3rd-step to ask a power greater than myself into my life. So I've been doing prayers all along, but I still did not feel connected. The first step, if you got what I got, you're screwed. It's really that simple. I can't say it any other way, because you're not going to enjoy drinking if you've been here for a little while, and then you go out and you get it, and you go and drink. Because a head full of AA and a belly full of booze or any other substance just don't work. Just don't work. I watch it over and over again. So if you got what I got and you're here, stay here. I hear a lot of people say, keep coming back. Don't keep coming back. Stay. Because a lot of people don't keep coming back. People go out and die. And this is life and death. So I have that first step that in my innermost self, I know I can't drink safely anymore. And that's all I need to know. Everything else after that is hope to build something better for myself. I had to come to believe in the 2nd step that a power greater than myself would restore to me the sanity. So that meant I had to come to some kind of agreement that I was somewhat insane. I thought I was quite normal. I thought living under a bridge in a cardboard box, washing your clothes in toilet bowls is what everybody did. I got here, I lived in a halfway house, and I didn't understand why people would pay rent. I mean, it just made no sense to me because I was that warped and twisted when I got here. I started to believe in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous in a second tradition. When I walked in a room, I saw people that were genuinely happy and I couldn't steal it, I couldn't manipulate it, I couldn't buy it, and I started to believe that they had something that I wanted and didn't know how to get, but wasn't willing to do the work at that point. So I stayed around long enough to see a loving God work in this room, in these rooms and rooms like this, and I started getting a second step through a second tradition. I got to that third step, and they talked about God, and I was not making a decision to turn my own life over to care of God, no matter what anybody asked me, no matter how they asked me, because God and I didn't talk for many years. The book talks about it a lot of places. It talks about us being anti-religious. It talks about why we act the way we do. And I made a decision in step three to turn my own life over to care of the rest of the steps, as my sponsor asked me, as the 12 and 12 suggests. And that's what I did. I got to that fourth step, and I made that immoral inventory, because my inventory when I got here was not very moral. I lived on the streets of New York for 5 years. I was not responsible to anything or accountable to anyone. And I say that now because in step eight, I can't use that as an excuse not to look at my part in everything. And that's the first inventory. And that first inventory in step four is the inventory about me. I get to look at me for what I did, who I was, and all the mess that I believed was all around me. I get to that fifth step after that with this loving sponsor, and I believe we do a fifth step for three reasons. We go to God for forgiveness, we go to ourselves for understanding, and we go to another human being to practice humility. And in this, in that particular step, it says humility is a word often misunderstood to those of us who have made progress. It's a clear recognition of who and what we were by a sincere attempt to become what we could be. And then I get to make a list with my sponsor of all the mess that I created in step six, all my defects of character that he was kind enough to point out because I didn't see any. And then in step seven, so I stopped doing what was wrong. And then we get to the seventh step, which is where we were last week. And I'm start to doing what's right. And when we get to step seven, it specifically talks about humility. And we talk about humility as being right-sized, doing the next right thing. I didn't know what the next right thing was when I got here. I listened to what my sponsor told me to do. I didn't get into that, is this right or is this God's will? Is this my will? I used to say, I run into a wall, my sponsor said, turn left or right, God will get you where he wants you. It really worked well for me, that little simple stuff. So, but we assured no class of people made a worse mess of trying to live by our own formula than alcoholics. For thousands of years, we've been demanding more than our share of security, prestige, and romance. Now, if you come in here like I did with a warped perception, faulty judgment, lack of awareness, you're driven by fear, you're running on self-will, you don't know how to make healthy relationships with anybody. I got here, they told me I'm going to have three relationships. First relationship I was going to have was with myself through the steps. The next relationship I was going to have with a guy that my sponsor was going to introduce me to. And the third relationship I was going to have with others. And as you stay here, he told me that would change. And today I know that my first relationship was with God. And then it's with you guys. And least important in it today is me. That's a big change from the way I walked in here. And that only happened because of the work. I don't know how that happened or when that happened, but there's a word I use in step eight, and I'll talk about consideration, because that to me is the greatest form of love you can practice on another human being, to be considerate of how someone else feels. Because I never cared what anybody felt. I only cared what I wanted. So that seventh step was where I started getting the understanding of what humility really meant to me. We had lacked the perspective to see that character building and spiritual values had to come first, and material satisfaction were not the purpose of living. I had that backwards. The big book says on page 127, for us, spiritual well-being always, always preceded material growth, not the other way around. I was always looking for the wrong things. I talk about a sixth tradition, money, property, and prestige. Those are my higher powers. The bigger the car, the prettier the girl, the nicer the house, the more the money. Didn't keep me happy. I was very empty inside. I have a lot less on a material plane today, but I definitely have a lot more inside today. And I'm very grateful that that process worked for me. So I'm in this seventh step, and I'm trying to act my way into good thinking and taking all this affirmative action, and my sponsor says, stop trying to get good and just do, let things happen, don't try and make them happen. Another one of those great pearls I didn't like. A whole lifetime geared to self-centeredness cannot be set in reverse all at once. Seventh step talks about it. It says sometimes we want to be on the top of the heap, or sometimes we will hide below it. getting into the middle was real hard. Balance is the word for me in 7 and 8. I had no balance. It was either all the way to the left or all the way to the right. I didn't know how to walk down the middle of that road and see both sides of that road on either side, or the train coming at me most of the time. It says, again, we are driven by the insoluble conclusion which we draw from AA experience, that we surely must try with a will or else go by the wayside. So either I'm going to do this to the best of my ability, and if I don't, I'll probably drink again. And I don't want to drink. And it says I'm willing to go to any length at the beginning for a spiritual experience. That's prayer on 79 cents. At this stage, our progress, we are under heavy pressure and coercion to do the right thing. We are obligated to choose between the pains of trying and the certain penalties of failing to do so. These initial steps we take along the road grudgingly, yet we take them. I fought with my sponsor on everything he told me to do after the seventh step, because I know behind step 8, this is 9th step. That means I got to go talk to people. And I didn't want to tell these people I was wrong. I will tell you I am sorry all day long, but I will not tell you I was wrong. And my sponsor said every time I said I'm sorry, he says, you sure are. Took me a long time to own up to my part and get rid of those flaws within my personality that I wouldn't know how to let go of. So we enjoy moments in which serious, sometimes we get a real peace of mind. We actually get a glimpse of a peace of mind as we're doing this stuff. I can remember sitting in a meeting. I was about 8 months sober, and I don't know what happened. I didn't feel like drinking that day, and I called my sponsor. He said, I don't know what you did, but whatever you did, do it again tomorrow. But I had a whole day without thinking about drinking, and that to me was a miracle. And that was the first miracle I can hold on. And I was 9 months here, and I was doing everything they told me to do, but I still wanted a drink. And I can remember the first time that I hung up the phone on my ex-wife and didn't want to yell about her or curse at her or tell everybody what she did to me and how mistreated I was. We'll talk about that in a minute more. Those of us who have hitherto known only excitement, depression, or anxiety, in other words, all of us. See, anxiety, depression, and excitement, I'm an adrenaline junkie. I like those feelings. And I thrive in those feelings. And they'll either bring me to self-pity, or they'll bring me to the mood swings, and they'll all bring me to a drink. And if I didn't want to drink, I didn't know how to deal with those. Prayer, meditation, sponsorship, all this stuff helped me deal with this stuff. Something new has been added. When humility, which once stood for the force feeding of humble pie, it now begins to mean the nourishing ingredient which can give us serenity. See, as I was practicing things, I was getting calmer. I remember the first time I spoke with a person on the phone for some insurance problem, and I wasn't yelling and screaming at them. And I said to them on the other end of the phone, gee, you're doing your job. I shouldn't be yelling at you. I'm sorry. I never did that. I wanted to be right. I didn't want to be happy. I just wanted to be right at that time. And I started seeing those things. Now, this is in the 7th step. I'm not at 8 yet. And then it says, in every case, pain had been the price of admission to the new life. But this admission price had purchased more than we expected. It brought a measure of humility, which we soon discovered to be a healer of pain. We began to fear pain less and desire humility more than ever. A great turning point in our lives came when we sought humility as something we really wanted instead of something we must have. You know, I wanted what the old timers in the back that I used to think was sleeping back there when I got here. I didn't know what serenity looked like when I got here. They used to just sit back there. And then if something come up, they'd say something, and that was it. I didn't, you know, I just didn't think they were here. But they were at peace with themselves. And I didn't know how to get there. But I wanted it. So I hung around with them. I didn't get it that way, believe me. That's not how you get it. I got more aggravation than I wanted. I got a lot of work to do when I hung out with them. It says if we approach the actual taking of step, we may well, if we AAs inquire once more just what our deeper objectives are. Each of us would like to live at peace with himself and with his fellows. We would like to be the assurance that the grace of God could do for us what we could not do for ourselves. We have seen that character defects based on shortcomings or unworthy desires are the obstacles that blocked our path toward these objectives. We now clearly see that we have been making unreasonable demands upon ourselves, upon others, and upon God. Want to know how you get to step eight? Stop making unreasonable demands. I always made unreasonable demands. The chief advocate of our defects have been self-centered fear. Primary fear that we would lose something that we already possessed, or we would fail to get something we demanded. One of my favorite lines that I tell every one of my sponsees when they come to me with any kind of situation, as my sponsor said to me, where's God in all this? As soon as I do that, I diffuse whatever's really going on. If I see God in this, I probably wouldn't be acting 90% of the way I act 90% of the time, because when I see God in it, God will let me know what the right path is. I don't have to be beaten and blundered anymore. I know the difference between right and wrong. I always knew the difference between right and wrong. I just like to rush to wrong better than right. That's all. Just me. Living on the basis of unsatisfied demands, we are in a state of continual disturbance and frustration. Therefore, no peace was to be had unless we could find the means of reducing these demands. The difference between a demand and a request is plain to anyone. The seventh step is where we make the change in our attitude, which permits us, with humility as a guide, to move out from ourselves towards others and to God. The whole emphasis on step seven is humility. It really is saying to us that we now ought to be willing to try humility in seeking the removal of our other shortcomings as we did when we admitted we were powerless over alcohol and came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. If that degree of humility could enable us to find the grace of God, which such a deadly obsession could be banished, then there must be hope of the same result respecting other problems than alcohol. Alcohol is a symptom when I walk into the eighth step. It's not my problem anymore. It's one of the many things that I have going on in my life. But it's not what my problem is anymore. My problem centers in my mind. I have a disease that is telling me all kinds of lies. And I gotta not buy the lie anymore. And when I sit down with a sponsor and get into the eighth step, and then some of the promises of the seventh step, and we're getting right into eight now, because the eighth step, believe it or not, although it's about 16 pages when we read step 8 and 9 and the 12 and 12, and I'm going to read it in a minute, the A step is really only the third paragraph on the page, on page 76, and it's only lines 2 through 5. And here's what it says. I think I have it over here. Here's what the A step really entails. Not a lot in the big book, a lot in the 12 and 12. We have a list of all persons we have harmed and whom we are willing to make amends. We made it when we took inventory, which is your fourth step. We subject ourselves to this drastic self-appraisal. Period. That's all of eight. The rest of it talks about the different kinds of amends. Direct amends, indirect amends, financial restitution amends. Now, we do all that in eight, but that's all the eighth step talks about in the big book. Very interesting. I like that kind of stuff. But we have these promises in the seventh step as we get to this eighth step. First, we see humility as a necessity. We enjoy moments where there is something like real peace of mind. We begin to fear pain less. We make a change in our attitude, moving from ourselves towards other and towards God. Those are nice promises to walk out of a step into the next one. But what do I walk into the eighth step with now? I'm walking into the eighth step, and it says we made a list. We redouble our efforts. And we got the list in our fourth step. Now, some people will tell you to burn your fourth step. I'm not going to get into that kind of controversy. You do what your sponsor tells you. My sponsor said you better hang on to it, because in the eighth step it says we found our list in our fourth step, so hold on to it. Whatever floats your boat, please do it. Don't listen to me in this one. I just do what this says. I believe that very much. So I'm walking into this eighth step with all this stuff that I got from my fourth step, all these character defects I'm seeing, all this pain that I've been carrying, and I walk in with a lot of negativity, and I was full of hurt when I walked into my eighth step. I was hurt by my ex-wife not letting me talk to my kids. I was hurt by my ex-kid not wanting to talk to me. My old job not wanting me to come back to New York, to stay in New York looking to put me in jail for 25 years to life. I had a couple of things that I think I had that I was a little imbalanced with that made me unhappy. I was emotional. I was very forgetful. I was full of pain, physical, emotional, and spiritual. And that's what a harm is. We'll talk about that in a minute. The obstacles. I was. There was obstacles in my way. I was defensive. I was twisted. I was broken. I was resentful. I was looking for excuses. I like to minimize and maximize. I always like to tell people today that it's never as bad as I told you it was. It's never as good as I try to make you believe. Somewhere in the middle was the truth. I was aggravated. I had all these defects. I was embarrassed. I felt defective because of certain things that happened to me in my life. I was full of pride. I was overwhelmed. I had flaws going on. I was still angry in hate. I didn't get rid of anger in hate. Let me tell you, I didn't. I was still lying. I was still cheating. I was still vengeful. I still was selfish in a lot of ways. I had jealousy. I was miserly. I was looking to retaliate. That one went on for a while. I was impatient. I had no humor. I still was seeking attention. I still was neglectful. I still looked for domination. And I always played the victim. I still was playing the victim. I was still looking to control. I was wallowing, and I had depression, self-pity, and I love my favorite defect was isolation. So if I walk into a step like this, I don't want to do the work that's laid out before me. I don't know about anybody else. So I, first of all, didn't know what a harm was. To me, a harm is when I went outside of a place and I waited for somebody to walk out and I beat him with a baseball bat. You know, that I knew I hurt him. I mean, that was a harm. But I had a lot of troubles getting my self to understand what harms were. And it's defined, the word harm in a practical way, we call it a result of instincts in collision which cause physical, mental, emotional, or spiritual damage to other people. And if I look at that as a definition of harms, and I look at my fourth step, and I redouble my efforts, and do what the book tells me to do, in the 12 and 12 it says, steps 8 and 9 are concerned with personal relations. First, we take a look backward and try to discover where we had been at fault. Next, we make a vigorous attempt to repair the damage we've done. And third, having thus cleared away the debris of the past, we consider how, with our newfound knowledge of ourselves, we may develop the best possible relationships with every human being we know. 8 and 9 is about forgiveness. A lot to do with forgiveness. Forgiveness was a tough one for me. I hear a lot of different things on forgiveness. I only have my experience. My experience is my sponsor said to me, George, you don't put yourself on that list. You want to practice forgiveness? The way you practice forgiveness is you don't pick up a drink. You don't pick up a drug, and you will be forgiven. God will find a way to clean your heart of that stuff. That is the way I forgive myself. Then I learned to act my way into better thinking. I have a little saying that I have said for a long, long time. Forgiveness sets the prisoner free. And the prisoner was always me. See, when I'm not forgiving of someone else, I'm in a cage. I'm the one in jail, not them. And I had to let go of everything. The father issues, the mother issues, the abuse issues, the job issues, the wife issues, the children issues. My issues had issues that I had to let go of. I didn't know how to do that. But I wrote a list. And my sponsor said, make a list. Here's my list. It's not my first one. It's kind of, the other one's kind of ripped up. I still have it. It's like 3 pages long. These are the ones I actually did. And then I was told to break them down into categories. Those that I'm willing to let go of immediately. Those that I might let go of later on. Those that I don't want to let go of. And my sponsor, because I was such an anal retentive individual, he suggested that I make one of the people that were deceased that I was holding on to. I lost a sister while I was active and wasn't present. My father I talk about a lot because I stole his. In those days, they were called opium cocktails. When he was dying of cancer, I was stealing it and stealing his medicine. How do you make amends to someone who's no longer with us? So I had to put them on a separate list, my grandparents, all the people that were no longer here. So I had the people that were no longer here, my family, those I was willing, those I might be willing, and those I wasn't. And then there was one person that on any and all conditions I swore I'd never make an amend to. And I was told to make a special category that I swore I'd never make an amend to. And I'll tell a story about that tonight. So I have these lists, and I made these lists. And then my sponsor says, those are the emotional, spiritual, mental, and physical. Now there's another list. I said, why? Come on. He said, financial. and I do this with my sponsees, and he said to me, I want you to figure out, and then we're not talking about the institutions, we're not talking about the state of New York, we're not talking about the courts that I owe, the hospitals, we're talking about the cost of my addiction. So he says to me, well, how much did you use? I said, well, at the beginning, $10 a week, and at the end, $1,000 a day. How long did you use? 33 years. Oh, well, what's an average? I don't know, $20 a day? No, that's too low. So we figured out $60, and I probably undersold it then. So if you use a round off number with your sponsor, I started off with $60 a day, comes down at $24,000 a year over 33 years. It comes to something like $69,510 just for my use of drugs and alcohol. And he says, and what about all the free drinks and all the stealing and all the times on the job and blah, blah, blah. That was another $791,000 by the time I was done. $792,000 over 33 years that I figured I walked in here owing. Don't ask me where all that money came from. But it came to me when I didn't need it. And then when I got sober, I couldn't find it. You know, it's just the way it was. And it hasn't come back yet. So, but again, I was given these tools to use to line up my financial restitutions. And then we talked about the different kinds of amends, the direct amends, the indirect amends, the partial restitution amends, my favorite amends. I tell the story. I'm going to tell two stories of the ninth step, which I really didn't want to do, but I will because that's what I do. That's where God's taking me. I was pretty newly sober, and I used to get on lines at the down on 28th Street. And they had free food, and I used to go in line, and I used to have like $1,600 in my pocket from the job, and I'd get free food, because why would you spend money on food when you need it for other things? So I used to steal from the churches and the soup kitchens. So when I came down here, my sponsor had me get a brown bag with peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, put them in a bag with a dollar bill, and go out to Broward Boulevard on Thanksgiving and give it to the homeless to start making restitution. Although this was nine step stuff, it was also eight step stuff. The other one was, and I've done that, and I got involved with the soup kitchens down on Christmas and different meeting places to serve as part of giving back to what was the things that I took when I was out there. It's all part of eight step. Even though it's ninth, it's still eighth. I could not make contact with my children for many, many years. It took 14 years before there was any contact with my daughter. And it's over 20 years before my wife and I even spoke, and my son twice in the last 19 years we spoke. That's about it. And that's just none of my business other than me still picking up a phone and calling, part of my A step, me still writing letters and sending them to myself because I wasn't allowed to make contact. And when my daughter finally made contact after 14 years, she got to read all that good stuff. Who she brought to her mother, why my mother, her mother in 2009 finally called me, and we started talking. That's like a once every year or two, or unless there's a problem that we talk. But I still do those things as part of my eighth step, because those are part of the amends process. Even though they're nine step work, they're also eight step work. So I wasn't sure what was eight and nine. That's that thin line that a lot of people get confused with. And I'll talk about nine a lot more, because there's a lot in nine that is a lot different than just that. And then there was the story of the guy that I swore I'd never, under any conditions, make amends to. I had a friend of mine who worked in the Museum of Modern Art. His son was outside a bar in New York, and he got shot and killed. And I made a phone call to him because I wanted to give my sympathy. I heard about it down here. And one of the guys said, oh, by the way, so-and-so is here. Hang on a second. And this was the guy I would never talk to. Now, the reason I wouldn't talk to him is when my wife was pregnant, he was going out with one of my former girlfriends, one of my drinking girlfriends, which was really a hot mess. And he decided that my wife almost lost my son. She had a staining problem. She almost had a miscarriage. And I plotted for a long time to get even with this guy. I swear never. And we were good friends. And his brother and I were still friends. They said, so-and-so is here. Would you like to say hello? I said, no. He said, hang on. He's getting on. I got on my knees, and I said that little prayer on page 79, strength and direction to do the right thing, no matter what the personal thing is. It is the ninth step. He gets on the phone, and I said, by the way, if I ever did anything wrong to you, I ask your forgiveness. I almost choked on those words. But they came out.
And I said, where did that come from? And what ended up happening was, when he knew it was me, he started getting angry, and as soon as he heard that, he calmed down. Now, I never saw him again. I don't know if I will ever see him again. I probably won't. But if I do, I have no problem looking him square in the eye and knowing my side of the street is clean. See, that's what this is about. That's the forgiveness. And my heart wasn't heavy anymore, and I didn't want to hurt him anymore. And slowly but surely, I didn't want to hurt my wife anymore. And slowly but surely, I really prayed for the best for her. And all these things that were blocking me from the sunlight of that spirit, that love that I was so seeking through alcohol and drugs, was coming into my life a different way. And it was all because I was being considerate. It says a lot of things in the eighth step. One of the things that I had a lot of trouble with when I got to step eight, when I got here, as I heard people talk about, I'm an alcoholic and I am not responsible because I was drunk. I am accountable. Sorry, not going to like this. Bullshit. I'm responsible and accountable for everything I did. Because the truth of the matter is I didn't have a way to live and I would have behaved that way with or without this program before I got here because I didn't have a way to live. So all those behaviors that I had that I can't use as an excuse anymore to behave the way I always behave, I had to own up to. And that hurts. That's painful. To get on the phone and tell somebody, listen, you weren't there for them because you were too busy getting loaded and you really didn't give a shit about how they felt. It's hard stuff, especially when it's your own child. One forgave, one did. It's just the way... That goes. What happens when we wallow in depression, self-pity, and inflict those upon those about us? Those are a roster of some of our harms. That kind of living makes us practicing alcohol difficult and unreasonable. We could extend these kind of defects on indefinitely. When we take such personal traits into shop, office, and society of our fellows, they can do damage almost as extensive as they have caused at home. If I sit down and really look at my behaviors, I don't want to talk about relationships because that's what this is about. The first relationship I had to have with myself was to get honest with myself, and I couldn't do that. Honesty was a process that came through me through a loving sponsor who told me I was full of shit and I better straighten up or I'm going to drink. And I had another guy that said, here's $20. You don't want to be here. Go get drunk. And I came back every day, I'm back. You know. I stayed sober on resentment. Then I stayed sober on fear. And then I stayed sober on steps. Eventually, I had to find the grace of God. And the way I found the grace of God was through the process of trusting another human being and cleaning my house. And cleaning my house meant being honest. Getting honest with lying, cheating, stealing, manipulating, and all those wonderful defects that I read the other day, all 160 that my sponsor was kind enough to point out that I was living in. And not being considerate of another human being. You know, the fourth step tells me I'm hard on myself, but considerate of others. I was always hard on myself. Actually, I wasn't. I really was hard on everybody else and considerate of myself. I had that backwards, too. And as I got here and started seeing that, I thought I was really this nice guy that got a raw deal. And when I really looked at what I did, I wasn't such a nice guy. It's not a nice guy that sits in a, and tells somebody they're going to come pick up their children on a Friday night and doesn't show up for a week. It's not a nice guy that throws the kids in the back of a car and then goes to a bar and goes gets loaded. It's not a nice guy. Nice guys don't do that. So I have all these things that are going on. It's not a nice guy to tell somebody they're going to be up for a meeting when they're opening up Ellis Island and decide to go get loaded the weekend before and don't show up and cause a lot of problems for the museum to open up on time. That's not the things we do as being responsible human beings. And these are the things I did before I got here. So I had to learn about being respectful to other human beings. The first one I had to learn to do that with, I got to practice with a friend of mine. I always tell the story of my friend Linda. She's not here right now. I was new in recovery. She had, you know, Linda or I. She had 3 more months than I did. I walked in. She wore spandex. She looked good. I was in love. I don't know about anybody else that happens to. My sponsor said, you're defocusing. You're not paying attention to what you need to be paying attention to. Go tell her what you think. Being a good sponsee, I went to her after a 10 o'clock in the morning meeting at a
the old bottom line and told her not only what I think, I told her what I wanted to do and how I wanted to do it. I was just listening to my sponsor people. She said it's a small step for your recovery. You know, she was very gracious about it. And I told her I was never that honest with another woman in my life. You see, because I walked in on my wife with a friend of mine. And I didn't trust women. And I didn't trust men. So I didn't trust anybody when I got here. Now I got to be honest with somebody. I have to find a friend. So what I ended up doing is I told her that story, and we became friends, and I was told I couldn't hang out with her unless it was a group of 12 or more, and pretty much my first year it was 12 or more. And the longer I hung out, the more grateful I was that I didn't cross a boundary that would have not been healthy. We're great friends to this day. I'm grateful that I never took it in the wrong direction, because we probably would have killed each other. But we are friends, and that was something I didn't know how to be. How do I become a friend to another person? How do I learn to be a friend to a man or a woman without wanting something else out of it? How do I learn to be a respectful human being? Because I didn't respect myself when I got here. How can I respect you? So these were things the eighth step were giving me that I didn't know. And the people I harmed were starting to show up in my life. I worked at Denny's, and a guy comes in who I took a Bob Plump radio out of his Peugeot. And he walked in, and he wasn't on my A-step list, so I'm going to tell everybody, if you got an A-step list, please leave room on the bottom, because if you don't think you're going to offend somebody in your recovery, you're wrong. And he walked in, and he wasn't on my A-step list, and I got there, I said the prayer, and we went and talked, and he knew I stole it. I made some story up at the time, and when I was running the streets in New York, and his amend to me was, don't get high, and we're fine. I was 30 days sober. I like my 30-day story. I like stories, as everybody knows by now. I'm in a meeting. It's a 10 o'clock in the morning meeting, and they're talking about the eighth and ninth step. And I decided that I have a friend of mine that I stole $5,000 from. Actually, what I did is I stole their engagement ring, and I sold it for what I wanted. And I heard the eighth and ninth step, so I liked what I heard, so I picked up the phone and I called them. And they have a brother in the program, thank God. And I told them that I'm sorry for what I did, and I'm now in recovery, and I owe you this. I know I can't pay you now, blah, 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 blah. And they said, if you stay sober, you don't owe me a thing. That's a gift. I liked it so much. I said, well, this guy I took $10 from, let me call him. Now I'm 30 days sober, 31 days sober. And I call him, and I get this back. That's why I read that thing about humility at the beginning. I have about $10. That's now 19 years later. We still don't talk over $10. So, you know, this is where sponsorship comes in. It's very important you do this with a sponsor. So when I got a hold of my sponsor after the next day and told him what I did, he said, where the hell did you get that idea from? Well, they were reading 8 and 9. He says, you haven't done one yet. So don't rush on these things. Don't rush on these things. I mean, this is a journey. This is not a destination. And the eighth and ninth step is lifelong time. I mean, I always wanted to make amends to my mom right away. She was on my list. It was easy because I manipulated her my whole life. So, you know, I was looking forward to that. They didn't let me do that one for a while. My sister and I, took me 2 years before I was able to do it with her, because whenever I spoke to her, I wanted to either kill her or drink. I didn't know which one was going to come first, but I wasn't ready. So I had to pray for the willingness to be willing to make these amends and ask God to let these people show up in my life when he wanted me to make them. You see, I didn't remove any one of those defects or those problems that I had created. What ended up happening is I got at peace with my forgiveness with the other people, and God then removed them from me. So having surveyed our whole area of our human relations and having directed exactly what personality traits in us injured or disturbed others, we can now commence to ransack memory of the people whom we have given offense. To put a finger on the nearby and most deeply damaged ones is not hard to do. As year after year we walk back through our lives, as far as memory will reach, we shall be bound to construct a long list of people who have, to some extent or other, been affected. We should, of course, ponder and weigh each instance carefully. We shall want to hold ourselves on the course of admitting the things we have done, meanwhile forgiving the wrongs done others, fancy or real. Mm-hmm. See, I have a lot of things that I did others in my mind that never happened. A lot of things other people did to me that never happened. But that's my truth. I still believe they did. So whether they're real or not doesn't matter. It's how I approach them that matters. We should avoid extreme judgment, both of ourselves and others involved. We must not exaggerate our defects or theirs. A quiet objective will be the steadfast aim. Whenever your pencil falters, there's that pencil again, we can fortify and cheer ourselves by reminding a experience in this step meant for others. It's the beginning of the end of isolation from our fellows and God. So I am no longer isolated from God. I will tell you that in my sixth year of recovery, I was living with a young lady, and I'm going to talk about other people putting their insides on your outside. My best relationship. I have wonderful relationships today. I have wonderful sponsees in my life that I have healthy relationships with. I have a wonderful sister that I have a healthy relationship with today. I have a daughter that I have a tremendous relationship with that's extremely healthy. I have a wife that we still don't talk, but it's as healthy as it can be at this point. But I still work towards it. I still work to improve it. I have a son that is in God's hands. That's where I leave him. I have people that I work with that I have respect and I'm given and get respect in their healthy relationships. So I've learned how to have a healthy relationship. I had a young lady I was going out with, and I'll say a young lady because she was, and I was living with her, and in my sixth year of recovery, I cut my hand off with a circular saw. It's another story for another day. And what ended up happening was she didn't want to play house anymore. And I started blaming myself because I thought I was the defect in the relationship, because in all my relationships, the common denominator of all my defective relationships was me. And for the first time in my life, I wasn't sure. So I went to my sponsor, John, who I try to speak to this weekend, and he suggested that I get all my sponsees and all my friends that know us together and have them do my inventory. See, I invite people to do my inventory today. And they did. And the good news was that I was in a healthy relationship. The bad news was she wasn't. So, and that for me, the bad news was because she wasn't willing to communicate. Communication is a very important thing in a healthy relationship. So the communication did not happen, but I refused to let a friendship go. And we stayed in contact, and in 9 months, we had a healing. We never got back together, but I learned from that point on, I know what a healthy relationship looks like. I learned it from a sponsor who gave me one when he taught me about dignity and respect when he was dying, who gave me that dignity and respect to give it to my mother, who gave me that dignity and respect to give it to a friend, who gave me that dignity and respect through those friends to give it to my sponsees. So I know what a healthy relationship looks like. I also know I still can sit in a room of Alcoholics Anonymous and watch somebody walk in here and know that if I'm attracted the way I see that, they got 30 days or less. Because my mind still is not 100% healthy. But the difference is I don't act out on it. And that's a gift that was given to me. I have respect for the people in this room. No one denied me my recovery. I do not do well with people that deny other people their recovery. And that is a healthy relationship. So I get it step in the way of that. And I will open my mouth because I was taught to do that. I was taught that I am responsible to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous and stand up for Alcoholics Anonymous. So, you know, the positive things I got out of my eighth step, it says, although these reparations take innumerable forms, some of the general principles we find guiding, reminding ourselves we decide to go to any length for a spiritual experience, we ask that we be given the strength and direction to do the right thing no matter what the personal consequences are. I've lost friends in Alcoholics Anonymous because of personal consequences, because I won't co-sign their nonsense. I've lost sponsees that way. I am not here to judge anyone, but I sure as hell ain't going to let somebody hurt someone. Nobody let me hurt me when I got here. They showed me love and respect and dignity, and I'm grateful for those people because I didn't have that when I got here. So the things I got, I found that I was discovering more about myself. I was learning to repair my behaviors. I was at peace. I had partnership. I had brotherhood. I had willingness to do more. I learned some morality, and I knew how to take inventory, and the biggest thing I got was forgiveness. I learned how to give forgiveness. I learned how to love another human being without any expectation of return. What a gift that is in the AA step. I learned to focus and be patient. I learned to admit my faults and keep my mind open. I had some confidence now because I knew I wasn't going to drink. I didn't know how I was going to live, but I knew I wasn't going to drink. I learned a lot about God and prayer and humility and becoming happy and searching myself to be a better person and not being so judgmental of others. I became I practiced better actions and I had good motives. I knew about restitution and how to make things right that were wrong that I was doing. I was thoughtful. I was calm. I had great reflection. I was getting insight. I learned about being quiet and really analyzing what that step says, making those lists. I learned thoroughness and I was objective. I was steadfast. I found courage through that A step. I learned something about integrity and consideration. And consideration is what I come back to. That's my favorite word. When I'm considering another, I don't got time to be selfish or self-centered. And if I am considering another, I will have their utmost at heart. The big book says on page 20, our lives as ex-providence drinkers depend on our constant thought of others and how we can meet their needs. I didn't care about anybody else's needs. I only cared about my own. The A step taught me to care about you, and that's that second inventory. In step 10, we'll talk about the inventory with God. We got 2 weeks for that. Thanks for letting me share on step 8.